Daily Dribble. This is the Daily Dribble podcast, guys, and as always, I'm your host, Nick Zammit, back here on a Friday night, dropping another solo episode, and as they say, third time is the charm. I promised last week a little video installment. It didn't come to life. If you're not going to do a job well, don't do it at all. Thus, I didn't put it up as a video format, so here's hoping for the third time. Hopefully, it all goes up on YouTube smoothly this week. Guys, I appreciate you joining me here tonight. Got a massive episode in store. If you tuned into last week's episode, I did my Eastern Conference grading based on what transpired across the last season. Today we transition to the West. So I think certainly in my opinion, the harder of the two conferences. Thoroughly looking forward to getting into that momentarily. Before I do so though, guys, a big shout out to the Spotlight Sports Network and The Cover. Once again, shouting out those two entities from both the US of A and Australia here, helping get our voice out to the broader market out there. So incredibly thankful for the work both those groups are doing there. Guys, be sure to stay up to date with all of our socials, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, TikTok, and LinkedIn. Hit us up there. Do love having a chat with all you guys. So be sure to stay up to date with all the news from the NBA and the NBL breaking from all those social media pages, as well as dropping a like, share, comment, subscribe, all that good stuff wherever you listen to the podcast. It's very much appreciated from myself and the two fellas, Rowan Lee. They might not be joining us over the last few weeks, but they certainly appreciate all the support as well. Certainly wishing them well. I know I spoke about last week how they might be potentially sitting on a beach sipping cocktails on their time off, but it's not the case down here in Tassie. It's pretty chilly. It's been a very chilly day here, so we're certainly in the thick of winter, but we certainly wish them well in their continued break. Right, let's get into it.
Daily Dribble.
No mucking around on today's episode. As I said, the Western Conference is a lot more to rattle through. Just prior to starting, though, I will just mention, as like last week, guys, these gradings are going to be based on my predictions at the start of the year, which I'll mention in terms of standing positions and things like that. So if you're kind of just a little bit unsure where this grading's coming from, that's kind of what I'm basing it off. My predictions at the start of the year and how they fared. As always, though, guys, as I said last week, I did have quite a few of you reach out during the week letting me know what you thought of my Eastern Conference gradings. Likewise, feel free to do the same with the Western Conference this week. I'm sure there'll be possibly a couple more contentious gradings in this, so be sure to let me have it where I went right, where I went wrong as well. I love it. I love hearing what you guys have to say and what you think of the episode, so be sure to hit me up on that front as well. Well, I'm just looking at it here. How are we looking on the old lag? Yeah, no, it's looking all right. We should be all right this week, touch wood. Let's get into it, though, guys. Let's start with Dallas. So I predicted them for a fifth-place finish. They ended up finishing fourth at 52-30 this season. The main man, Luka Doncic, missed a bit of time with injury this year, but this guy, his star is just continuing to rise, really becoming one of the elite players within the league. Another massive year just in terms of counting stats, 28.4 points, 9 rebounds, 8.5 assists. I think, I'm gonna call it early. I think he was my pick this year, but I'm going to say next year, Luka Doncic, MVP. I think it's really just a matter of time before he gets, takes ascendancy of the league. And it kind of feels the way he's been building, his playoff performance, everything is building towards next year, I think, for Luka. So don't be surprised to see him pick it up. And there's my early pick there. They lost Porzingis during the year, but brought in Spencer Dinwiddie, who was hugely beneficial just in their guard depth, an area they've struggled with a little bit. But I said going into the season, I guess with that in terms of guard talk, going into the season, I thought Jalen Brunson was going to be one of the most underrated players in the league. He certainly proved me right on that front. 16 points, 4 rebounds, 5 assists, and really did settle the ship whilst Luke was out. Namely, those first couple of games in that series against the Jazz. He was phenomenal and really just steered the offense, as well as being a catalyst for them coming together on the defensive end as well. Dallas were a good team during the season without being great. They certainly didn't set the world on fire, but did just enough to get through things, clinch that home court advantage, which was huge. Getting to the playoffs there, they faced the Jazz. They got a 4-2 win. And then they got a 4 against all odds. They came up against the Phoenix Suns in round 2. They got a 4-3 win in this one after being down 3-2. But games 6 and 7 were probably two of the most incredible games I'd ever seen. The number one seed just getting absolutely blown apart. Game 6, they lost, the Mavs won 113-86. We kind of thought, maybe it's the one Phoenix let slide. It was on the road. but they backed it up. The Mavs went on the road down to Phoenix in Game 7, winning 123-90. And really, it wasn't even that close. This game was done and dusted effectively in the second quarter. And to be honest, I was watching this live, and I thought I was in a time loop. It didn't quite seem real. Just the absurdity of the scoreline, the level at which Dallas were playing at, it was second to none. Therefore, with a win in that series, as I said, over the Suns in game seven, they ended up facing the Warriors in the Western Conference Finals. They went down 4-1 in this series, but take nothing away, it was a phenomenal season. They did it without a legit big, really, like Maxi Kleber's probably not that guy, Dwight Powell, and Tim Hardaway being out for a large chunk of the season, only played 42 games, but a very successful season for this team. I gave them a B-plus grade. I think they've got big things coming. I think they'll really ride the back of Luka. You know, they've lost Brunson this offseason. They've acquired Christian Wood, though, who addresses that big issue. I'm incredibly excited about what they can do moving forward. And as I said, my early pick for MVP, quote it right now, Luka Doncic. Incredibly excited to see what the Don can do next season. B-plus for the Dallas boys. Okay, the Denver Nuggets. Predicted for a fourth place finish for myself at the start of the year. They ended up finishing sixth at 48-34. Ooh, the guy, the man who's just running absolute roughshod over the league, Nikola Jokic, goes back-to-back MVP, 27 points, 14 rebounds, 8 assists, you know, a steal and a half a game, as well as a block a game, was just absolutely phenomenal. The year prior, it looked like, you know, that was kind of peak Jokic, but he went one better this season. Became the first player, the number one player, the first player in NBA history to record 2,000 points, 1,000 rebounds, and 500 assists in a regular season. It just speaks to the volume of what he gives this squad. Really is that focal point on both ends of the floor, but, you know, especially on the offensive end this season, he was the driving force, especially given the fact we didn't see Jamal Murray and Michael Porter Jr. only played 9 games. You know, he was doing it, you know, as I said, finished sixth, doing it without his two key running mates. He had a humongous load on his shoulders and really stepped up when the team needed him most, and therefore very deserving of that MVP award. You know, again, another team that didn't, you know, as like Dallas, they didn't set the world on fire early. They started quite slow to the season, almost looked dead and gone for a while there, but they just chipped away, you know, built up wins over time, kind of flew under the radar. Clinch at sixth seed there. I thought Will Barton and Aaron Gordon were really solid. Again, didn't set the world on fire. They didn't look like your number two and three player on a normal squad, but they did just enough to help facilitate Jokic. I thought it was fantastic to see DeMarcus Cousins back. I think he's still got a lot to offer a team. Played valuable minutes and really impacted the game. Whilst the emergence of the 26th pick, Bones Highland, I thought was a real big positive. Just quickly. Imagine calling your kid Bones. That is big, big energy right there. And I love it. I love it. Bones. Bones. That's a scary name going through primary school, I reckon. Bones Highland. Big shout out to him. I thought he was phenomenal in his rookie campaign. As I said, got to the first round there, faced the absolutely rampant Warriors, lost 4-1 in the series. And, you know, for me, it was really just a case of Jokic having too much to do. The Warriors just had too many options, too many avenues to go through, whereas the Warriors were, you know, kind of stuck there with Jokic. But, you know, they fell short of my predicted standings, but they outperformed my expectations, I think. If that makes sense, I'll repeat that again. They fell below my predicted standings, but they surpassed my expectations given their second and third players missing virtually the whole season. Therefore, I gave them a B-, which is solid. That's solid. That's well above average. You know, that's pretty good considering, as I said, without Murray, Porter Jr., big things coming for this team next season. I think that next season could be their real window of opportunity there. So looking forward to seeing what Denver can do. The champs. The champs are back. The dynasty rolls on. The Golden State Warriors. How stupid is this? Predicted them for a seventh-place finish. They finished third at 53-29. And what I love, this was a point I spoke about heading into the season, just the debate of whether, you know, do they go for it now? Do they just really, you know, look to offload some of the younger blokes and really put pieces around Curry, Thompson, Draymond. But they had their cake and eat it too. They were able to not only keep a championship team at the moment, but were also able to keep all those young players, your Kamingas, your Wisemans, your Pools. You know, the list goes on and on. Their depth is just phenomenal. These young players, I think, are really, really ready to take a step up next season. Moses Moody is a name I'm really fascinated to see how he plays out next season. But just the fact they were able to manage both aspects is a huge, huge plus in my eyes. Was disappointed not to see Wiseman at all. I know due to injury, you know, you can't help that. But I hope to see him fit and firing next season. I think there's big things still in the works for him. Awesome to see him back at Summer League the other day. So hopefully that's the start. Get a little bit of momentum, a bit of time back on court, and hopefully big things for him. Klay Thompson returned after an extensive sideline stint. Took a bit of time to get into the flow of things, but was super impactful when it mattered most. As was Draymond Green. I mentioned last week, you know, I've spoken about players like Jimmy Butler, Draymond in the same kind of vein. They're not 82-game players. Draymond's not an 82-game player anymore. He's a 16-game player. He's built for the playoffs. That leadership, that kind of killer instinct really shone through in the playoffs. So hats off to Draymond. He shut a lot of people up out there. And, you know, you can't fault his effort. When it matters most, he steps up. So I thought he was fantastic. Moving into the playoffs, they beat Denver 4-1, beat the Grizzlies 4-2 in round two, got over the Mavs 4-1 in the conference finals before overcoming the Beantown Boys, the Boston Celtics, in Game 6. They won that one 4-2, and it was a fascinating series. I know we've spoken over the last month or two quite extensively about the NBA Finals, but they really did look in trouble till quarter four in Game 3 there, and then they just flipped the switch. You know, Steph was – they just showed that killer instinct, that real hunger and that knowledge that they'd been here before, whereas the Celtics looked a little bit out of their depth with this iteration of the team. Steph was phenomenal all season long, especially in the playoffs, and really, really deserved his first finals MVP. Just, it speaks to the question, a question we've asked quite a few times on the show, and we spoke about it with the lads from the Fifth and Dribble podcast. Is he top 10 of all time? I'll leave it to you guys out there. I'd love to hear what you think on this point. As I said, we've spoken about it quite extensively. But I'd love to hear from you guys out there what you think. Is Steph Curry, you know, you could argue it's now or when his career is over, is he going to be a top 10 player of all time? Averaged 25.5 points this season, 5.2 rebounds, 6.3 assists, and nearly a steal and a half a game. But his impact is so much greater than that. The attention he draws opens up so much for his teammates and probably has the biggest gravity of any player in the league, just because you really have to guard him from half court. There's not many players like that with his, you know, you look at Trae Young, but Steph does it with such a greater consistency. And the fact I love, as I mentioned, during the regular season, it was, 5.2 rebound. In the playoffs, a little bit more. He was really hungry, really getting after the boards, and I love to see that from him. He plays a lot bigger than what he is as well. So a phenomenal season, very deserving NBA champions, deserving finals MVP. I gave the Warriors an A+. Well and truly, as I said, seventh place finish, certainly finishing third there, NBA champs, well and truly surpassed my expectations. Can't wait to see them run it back next season and these younger guys start to bleed in a little bit more to the squad. Big things in the works still. The dynasty rolls on. We'll go to the other end of things now. The Houston Rockets, I predicted them for a 15th place finish and that they finished 15th with a record of 20-62. Season went pretty well as expected. Number two overall pick, should I say, Jalen Green, started slowly, really built towards the back end of the season, putting up 17 points, 3.5 rebounds, 2.5 assists, but showed a real explosiveness and desire to attack the rim, which I love. Plays with no fear and a real swagger about him. So he's quite an exciting, you know, there's not much exciting pieces or movement happening around Houston there, but Jalen Green is certainly one of them. They struggled quite a lot with team disharmony throughout the season. Kevin Porter Jr., Christian Wood. It was just not a very cohesive unit there. It impacted with and it showed with their kind of, I guess, their chemistry on the floor. I think I give them a little downgrade. I think even though this offseason they've offloaded John Wall to the Clippers, I still think they could have potentially have done that during the season with John Wall and Eric Gordon to given they weren't going anywhere as a team. So I think they both could have been offloaded during the season. And granted, I think for the amount of money you were paying John Wall, 40-plus million, I think the best thing would have been to have him on the court and just nurture these young players, these KPJs, you know, Jalen Green, to give them a little bit of exposure to playing at a high level, playing with a high-caliber point guard. You know, he got paid a boatload of cash to do sweet jack all. So I give them a downgrade on that front. D-plus in my eyes for the Houston Rockets. Don't have too much else to say about him. Was, you know, pretty much went according to script. Hopefully things can build there pretty soon. It's crazy to think these guys were in the NBA Conference Finals, Western Conference Finals, only a handful of seasons ago. James Harden and Chris Paul running the show, and now it's 20-62 record. How things can change so quickly in the NBA. We'll move ahead. We'll head out west. Oh, we're out west in general, but we'll head out to the coast there with the LA Clippers. I predicted them for an 8th place finish. They finished 9th at 42-40. Did technically in the standings finish 8th, but due to losing the playing game against the Pelicans, they slipped to 9th. So we'll say 9th. As I said, 42-40 record. Really funny year. Just never really heard anything about them. For a team, even though they were out, their stars were out, as star-studded as them in such a big market, they were really, really quiet this season. Really quiet this season. I can't honestly think of too many instances where they were in the news. But they just went about their business, no fuss, collecting wins. You know, a +500 record is certainly serviceable given they were missing Paul George for the majority and Kawhi Leonard for the season. And that's the thing. They just did it as a team basis. We're really a solid team without, you know, with good output from a lot of players without any superstar performances. Amir Coffey developed. Terrence Mann continued to establish himself, getting a bit tongue-tied there, whilst Luke Kennard shot phenomenal from three and was a real dog on the defensive end. So, you know, a lot of names there, just getting contributions out of. They got Norman Powell and Robert Covington during the season whilst offloading Bledsoe, which I'm really high on for them. Offloading Bledsoe, Keon Johnson, and Justice Winslow to the Blazers there. Great trade. I'm a big fan of Norman Powell, big fan of Rob Covington, and I think once you put those players alongside the Paul Georges and the Kawhis of the world, it'll really open them up. On both ends of the floor, both phenomenal two-way players, so really excited about what they can do with a healthy squad next season. As I said, Kawhi missed the entirety of the season, so we didn't see him. PG came back late, only playing 31 games. Looked solid, averaged 24 and a bit points, 7 rebounds and nearly 6 assists, but really wasn't pushing too hard. I think next year he'll really ramp things up once he's got his running mate with him. Lost game one of the play-in. They went down 109-104 versus the Wolves, then lost to the Pelicans 105-101, thus sealing their fate. Was really just a bit of a year in limbo. I genuinely believe they'll be a threat next season. I think since adding John Wall, that's huge. Hopefully Kawhi comes back looking like an absolute animal. You know, that three-pronged attack with Wall, PG, Kawhi, you bring in names like your Norman Powers, your Covingtons, Zubac, Kennard, you know, these young blokes who I mentioned, Amir Coffey, Terrence Mann, Lukey Kennard. That is a stacked roster. So I certainly put the little warning out there now. Everyone in the Western Conference, beware, because the Clippers are going to be a force to be reckoned with. And rightly so, given the money that our Stevie Ballmer there has spent. He would certainly be hoping to see some rewards for his investments there. Okay, let's head to the Lakers. Just quickly on the Clippers, I gave them a C+. Don't forget that, C+. We'll go to the Lakers. This is going to look silly, isn't it? I predicted them for a first-place finish. They finished 11th at 33-49. Where do you start with the Lakers? The Westbrook experience just didn't work. Going into the season, many people, myself, I tried to hold a little bit of optimism about it, trying to kind of create visions in my head as to how it would work. That fell through pretty quickly. I honestly believe he would have been like in a sixth man role. It would have been more preferable just leading that second unit, enabling AD and LeBron to really flex their muscle with that starting five. Didn't play out like that, and there was just too many ball-dominant players in that starting unit. Just didn't click. And what makes it even worse, given, you know, the way Westbrook went this season, it's horrible seeing all the players over the last few seasons that we've got rid of start to bowl out. You know, you look at Lonzo, Kuz, Caruso, KCP, Josh Hart, the names just go on and on and on. Ingram. There's a lot of players, a lot of high-caliber players we have let go over the last few seasons. I know we won the title a few years ago, but, you know, this was quite the fall from grace this season. Frankie Vogel had his contract terminated at the end of the season. And the big thing was they just struggled with injury all season. That's certainly not an excuse, but AD and LeBron missed a combined 68 games. Kendrick Nunn missed the entirety of the season. You know, Trevor Ariza, THT, they had surgeries early in the season. And they didn't have anything to hang their hat on. In the 2020-2021 season, the Lakers had the best defense in the league. 2020-2021, best defense in the league. This season, they were 22nd in offensive efficiency and 21st in defensive efficiency. Like, they were in the bottom third for both ends of the floor. After only a couple of seasons ago, being the number one ranked defense in the league. It doesn't bode well at all. It is quite concerning. And I just don't know how they turn it around. They've got to put the right pieces around. It's really a big chemistry thing. They've got to play with a bit of desire, a bit of passion. Time will tell how the Westbrook situation plays out. I know from recent reports, it's starting to seem pretty likely that Kyrie and Westbrook will be swapped, just negotiating the pick side of things at the moment. Watch this space. So keep up to date with our socials. We'll be sure to let you know how that one plays out. On the positive side, Malik Monk, Austin Reeves, both phenomenal, really stood out this year. LeBron James, his continued output. He's just aging like a fine wine. The man's put up 30.3 points, 8.2 rebounds, 6.2 assists. And what I love is the fact he did it on really good efficiency. He did it on 52.4% from the field, whilst taking a career high, 8 threes a game and going at 36% on them. 8 threes a game for the King. It's not something we've become accustomed to. Maybe more so in the last couple of years of his career, he started to jack up the threes a little bit more and hitting them with a better consistency. But if you look at the scope of his career across the board, it's not something that we're accustomed to seeing, but love to see it. He's got that killer instinct. That step back's on point at the minute. For AD, only played 40 games, but was able to put up 23 points, 10 rebounds, three assists, two blocks and a steal a game. But again, just struggled with injury and couldn't get into the flow of things. Focus will be on having those heavy hitters healthy next season. It was a wasted year. LeBron's not getting any younger. It was absolutely a wasted year. Super, super disappointed that they just fell apart in the back half of the season and weren't even able to make the play-in. That's pretty poor. I would have loved to have just seen that for the pure theater of it all. LeBron in a do or die game, seeing what he could do if he could wheel them to a playoff series. Wasn't to be. The Spurs clinching that last place there. Therefore, I have given the LA Lakers a big F for failure this season. I think across the East last week, and the West this week, I think they received my worst grading. So a big F there for the Lakers. Let's move ahead to the Memphis Grizzlies. Ooh, here we go. Let's change my tune a little bit. I predicted them for an 11th place finish. They finished second at 56-26. And here I am on the record. I've been a doubter of the Grizz for quite a while now. I saw potential there, but I just didn't know if they were in that upper echelon of Western Conference teams. I am officially a Memphis Grizzlies believer. They have converted me this season. The way they go about their business, the way their squad's constructed, where they're poised for the next 5 to 10 years, super, super, super exciting. I'm all aboard the Grizz train at the moment. I thought the loss of Valanciunas might hurt them a little bit, but it didn't impact them at all. Stevie Adams was fantastic, and probably, you know, all the accolades go to Desmond Bain, Jaren Jackson Jr., Ja Morant, but Stevie Adams, probably not so much in the playoffs. He kind of almost got played off the court there, especially against Towns. In the regular season, though, was phenomenal. 7 points, 10 rebounds, and a career-high 3.5 assists. Really improved with his playmaking side of things and just gives so many more options to his teammates. He was clocking up 4.5 offensive rebounds a game. You know, one of the best in the league at that, and it just provides so much to your team. You know, getting those second chance possessions is huge, and it really wins and loses games if you get them or don't get them. Ja missed time, but to be honest, it was a stat we mentioned a bit throughout the year. They almost played better without him, record-wise, that was. And here's a fun little fact. The Memphis Grizzlies this season actually tied a franchise record for 56 wins this season, tying that franchise record. Phenomenal work there. And as I said, missing their marquee guy for big chunks in the season. When he was on the floor, though, Ja Morant was elite. 27.5 points, 5.5 rebounds, 6.5 assists, and showed real strides in his game with increased free throws and threes taken, which you love to see for a guy that young. And it only adds more strings to his bow. He is the complete package. You know, there's good players in the league who have got, you know, potential. But then there's good players who have just superstar potential. And he is well and truly, he's arguably almost on that superstar level now. Certainly getting towards it very, very quickly. He has got a very bright future ahead, as does this team. Jaren Jackson Jr. and Desmond Bain both made great strides in their game as well. Desmond Bain in particular. How's this? Last season, Desmond Bain, 9.2 points a game. He jumped this year to 18.2 points a game, nearly doubling his output there on the scoring side of things. Was both, you know, Triple J and Desmond Bane there, both perfect complementary pieces for Ja. Get their points, get their stats, do their thing, but without impacting Ja, enabling him to do his thing as well. This squad made the playoffs a lot quicker than I expected. You know, in terms of their franchise trajectory, thought they might have been another, you know, a year or two away from being a genuine kind of threat. They knocked off the they knocked off the Wolves in a series 4-2. Could have gone either way. I'll speak about that series shortly in regards to the Wolves. But they managed to claw their way out of that one before going down to the Warriors 4-2. Now, I take nothing away from that. They lost game one at home by a point. That was despite Desmond Bane having 33 points, 10 rebounds, and Ja with 34 points, 9 rebounds in that one, and 10 assists, should I say. And, you know, once you go down at home by a point, that's almost heartbreaking. They showed a lot of fight, but that was really demoralizing. I take nothing away from them. They went down to the reigning champs, took it to 6 games. Phenomenal season across the board. I gave them an A rating. And I really just think that, as I said, they are primed, poised, and ready to go for the next 5 to 10 years. Don't be surprised to see Ja Morant with an MVP next to his name as well. You know, I certainly see that that potential in him. And, you know, he's going to attract attention just for the way he plays the game. The highlight reel dunks, you know, especially if he's adding threes and he's got such a well-rounded bow and the team's putting up wins. He's going to be well and truly in contention over the next few years for that MVP award. A rating there for the Grizzlies. Okay, let's go to the Minnesota Timberwolves. After a short drink break there. Let's go to the Minnesota Timberwolves. I predicted them for a 10th place finish. They finished 7th at 46-36. Another team. A lot of teams this season seem to have rocky starts and really kind of pulled it together over the second half of the season. Minnesota were no different there. They really, really ramped up after that All-Star break. Collecting wins at quite an impressive knot. Cat, 24.5 points, 10 rebounds, 3.6 assists. Tongue twister. Yet I feel the season was really Anthony Edwards. The season he established himself, I feel like that number one guy. He's going to be the kind of the fulcrum of that team. 21 points, 5 rebounds, 4 assists, and a steal and a half a game. So granted, you could look at it as if Towns had better stats. But I think the team just feeds off Edwards' energy on both ends of the floor. Like, he is really that bright spark and that kind of the conductor on the train. He's the guy conducting things. And they, as I said, they just feed off it. These young blokes, you know, Russell, we look at Beasley, all these other guys, they just fed off what this young buck was doing this season. I loved it. I'm just thinking about Edwards now, where I have him in the hierarchy of the NBA landscape. You know, is he building towards being at a stage where you look at him in comparison with, you know, let's say, you know, the Tyler Heroes, the probably not quite yet, the Donovan Mitchells of the league, the Devin Bookers, he's probably not quite there yet. But you see over the next year or two a world in which he's going to get there. He's going to be in that star category, probably, maybe pushing towards an all-star level. Probably not an all-NBA level, but he's in and around the fringes, I reckon. I see that's where he's heading. Second-year guy. He saw a great uptick in most counting stats there, which is awesome. Good to see how his development's progressing, and you expect that to continue next season. They made it to the play-in, as I said, finishing seventh. They had that 7-8 matchup versus the Clippers. They got up in this one 109-104. They were then tasked with facing the Memphis Grizzlies in the first round. They lost this one 4-2. Now, this is a series that probably should have gone further and arguably could have gone their way. It was such a bizarre series. They had the series at 2-2. Game 5, they lost. So the Timberwolves, game 5, they lost 111-109, went down by 2 points in this one, but led by 11 going into the last quarter. Heartbreaking loss there. Game 6, though, they lost 114-106, went down by 8 points. But again, they led by 10 points heading into that last quarter. They got outscored 40-22 to bow out in 6 games there. Disappointing. Certainly disappointing, given that they had a real chance to win this series, I believe. From a lot of the parts, they were probably on top. But I think that'll come with experience for them. Tremendous development within the squad this year, and just having those playoff lumps builds character, builds experience, and I think they'll be in good shape next season. Added Rudy Gobert in this offseason, so it's going to be a bit of a rejigged squad. But I think things are, building nicely in Minnesota. I gave them a B-. I was very impressed with their season and especially the way they conducted themselves in the playoffs. Even though bowing out in Game 6 there, they had a real chance to beat the Grizzlies, I believe. Let's go to the Pelicans. The New Orleans Pelicans, I predicted them for a 9th place to finish. They finished 8th. But 9th based on record, as I said, it comes back to that playing game with the Clippers. So by beating them, they jumped to 8th. With a 36-46 record, had an absolutely shocking start to the season. I had well and truly written this squad off. They started the season 1-12 across their opening 13 games. And to be honest, like not taking the piss at all, it looked as if they were going to struggle to win 10 games for a little while there. Things started to kick, though. Valanciunas started playing some good ball. Likewise, Jose Alvarado broke into the squad. Ingram started to pick up his output as well. He had nearly 23 points a game this season, 6 rebounds and 5.5 assists. Again, his career is just building nicely. Another player that the Lakers let go and is now seeing flourish. But the acquisition of CJ McCollum, I think, is when things really started to turn. Just gave them that another offensive output, like another offensive-minded guy who can give you a bucket, and gave them another dimension to that where a lot of the load was on Ingram's shoulders. They just had that two-pronged attack there with high-caliber shooters. It really makes a difference. For me, though, the highlight of the season was, I'm sure a lot of you guys would have seen it, a lot of ESPN highlights there. In the game versus OKC, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander hit that deep three, and it looked like it sealed the win with a couple of seconds to go, before Devontae Graham threw up a prayer from, 85 to 90 feet on the buzzer to win the game. It was just phenomenal and certainly was, for me, in my eyes, with the Pelicans, the highlight of their season. That was just a surreal moment. It looked like they had it, Shai hitting an absolute bomb, and for Graham to just throw up that just a filthy, filthy prayer. His calls were answered, though, and the Pelicans getting the win in that one was super, super exciting. As I said, the wind started mounting. They got themselves into that play-in picture. In game one of the play-in against the Spurs, they beat them 113-103, knocking out the Spurs there. They then got into a matchup in that do-or-die spot for the 8th seed versus the Clippers. They won this one 105-101, had a 31-17 last quarter, which got them over the line and therefore had them in a matchup with the 1-seeded Phoenix Suns. Put up an admirable effort. They really did. They had the series at 3-3, lost games 3 and 4. That's okay. They didn't lose any fans, so really excited. Another time, really excited about this team for next season. Hopefully a healthy Zion next year will just be fantastic for not only the Pelicans, but the league as a whole. Certainly, as I said, they didn't lose any fans. But given their start to the season, what a turnaround to make the playoffs make the play-in first and foremost, then to make the playoffs, really take it up to the number one seed. It certainly bodes well for where their trajectory is heading. I gave them a C rating just because I thought they'd be in and around that mark. They fell well and truly flat at the start, but started to pick things up. They kind of were pretty much where I expected them to be. I give them a C rating. Okay. Let's move ahead to the OKC Thunder, a team I predicted for a 14th place finish. Got this one right as well, as like the Rockets. They finished 14th with a record of 24-58. Very similar to the Magic and the Rockets, kind of who I spoke about earlier on this episode, and the Magic the week prior. Had zero expectations for this team. Again, another team like the Grizz, they're really poised for the next 5 to 10 years. Their losses, I kind of give them, it's luck of the draw. I almost give them a plus for the way their losses paid off, because they ended up getting the number two pick in Chet Holmgren there, just kind of as they wanted it, kind of played out just as they'd envisioned. So that's fantastic. Josh Giddey, my man. You know, this is certainly my crowning achievement since becoming a podcaster, was the call on Josh Giddey. You know, prior to him starting with the Adelaide 36ers there in the NBL, said, watch out for this guy, watch out. He's going to do big things. I predicted him for a fifth, I think it was a top five finish in the draft. Prior to him even being a professional bowler, had a phenomenal season in the NBL, got picked up there with the OKC Thunder, and what a place for him to flourish. Giddey now, after coming in with a lot of doubts, a lot of people kind of thought his shot would be poor, his athleticism wasn't there. He now holds the record for the top four youngest triple doubles in NBA history. Just a fantastic stat there for him. He was putting up 12.5 points, nearly 8 rebounds a game, and 6.5 assists. Missed a bit of time towards the back end of the season with injury, but had a phenomenal rookie season, clinching the first 4 Western Conference Rookie of the Month awards. Was certainly gaining a bit of Rookie of the Year talk prior to his injury. But, what a player, what a talent, what a spot for him. It couldn't have worked better. And I think him and SGA really showed their compatibility together. SGA, 24.5 points, 5 rebounds, 6 assists, and just is really starting to show, showing why he chose to stay there. He's the guy. He's undoubtedly the guy. He's got everything he wants. He's got a young team put around him. He gets to be the man, and I'm really excited to see what that combination of himself, Giddey, and now Shet can do. It was a funny year. It was almost a bit of a glue year just to see which other players would be able to stick with Giddey and SGA. So I think they're in a really good position. I think they were on par with where I thought they'd be. I think Giddey's output boosts them in my eyes. I'm giving them a C+, and that is largely due to the fact of Josh Giddey. You know, you get big ups for doing what he did this season. What a player. What a player. So high. It's good to see a bit of Aussie talent, you know, on the court as opposed to our Ben Simmons there. It's awesome to see an Aussie bloke getting out there and playing good, hard, high-quality ball. The Phoenix Suns. I predicted them for a second-placed finish. They finished first at 64-18. They're a team. It was like kind of Shark Week. Goddamn Shark Week. They just looked like they got a little bit of taste of blood the year prior, losing in the NBA Finals to the Bucks there, and just were so hungry for it. They really started on a house on fire. Their whole squad was just so well-rounded across the regular season. They just rattled through everyone. Big shout-outs was DeAndre Ayton was out for Bismack Biyombo and JaVale McGee. Really, really fantastic the way that they stepped up in his absence. Mikal Bridges there was a candidate for DPOY. Phenomenal for him. Chris Paul was the guy earlier in the season. Nearly 15 points, 4.5 rebounds, just under 11 assists as well as 2 steals a game. He was the guy who was getting the MVP talk earlier on, getting all the love there. But it was really Booker through the middle part of the season and the latter half who took over. Finished 4th in MVP voting as well as clinching an All-NBA first-team recognition. 27 points, 5 rebounds, 5 assists, a steal a game as well, and nearly just a tick over 38% from 3. Booker was fantastic and therefore, granted, deserves his face on the cover of 2K23 there. In my season predictions, this is I'm just checking what I wrote down here. My analogy, as I just mentioned, I said they were like a shark, got a sniff of blood, and will now be in a frenzy to get back after losing to the Bucks in the finals the season prior. And that they were, as I said, 64 wins. They rattled through everyone and were certainly many people's favorites for the NBA title. Came to the playoffs. They took care of the Pelicans 4-2. As I said, a good series there. The Pelicans took it up to them, but the number one seed prevailed, as they should do. They then matched up with the Mavs, got the first two games at home. Mavs bounced back. Game five. It's such a funny series, this one. So we're poised at 2-2. Game five, Phoenix won by 30 points, leading the series 3-2, and it looked almost as if the writing was on the wall there. But it wasn't to be. This is why you never count your chickens before they hatch. Dallas, as I said, won game six, 113-86. And, you know, you kind of thought, oh, was this just one on the road where the Suns just kind of dropped the ball a little bit, maybe wanted to clinch it on home court. So going down 27 in game six, I still can't believe this game, the way it played out. Rolled into game seven. This one, as I said, was early, pretty much effectively in the second quarter. The Mavs winning 123-90. Could have honestly been a 50-point-plus game, you know, barring when they brought in rotation players pretty much in the third quarter. They really, I think, dropped the ball. As I said, rolled through the regular season. Everything looked clicking. The squad was there. The squad was in great shape. I think this might have been their year. They missed a real big opportunity. Will CP3 get that elusive chip? That's the question. I gave them a B rating, but I just don't know where they go from here. We saw the news today that was to-ing and fro-ing as to whether Ayton would stay or not. He looks set to be staying put in Phoenix. So they're essentially running the squad back. But I just don't know. The teams around them are getting better. CP3 is another year older. I think this could have been the one that got away. The last 2 years, they should have at least got one title, I believe. So I think they've missed a real opportunity here. B rating, though, in my eyes. Actually, I'm going to take that back. That's a bit generous, given they got bowed out. I'm going to say B minus there. Yeah, B minus sounds fair. Let's just alter that. B minus. Let's move ahead to Portland. I predicted them for a sixth place finish. Finished 13th at 27-55. They're starting five at the start of the year. We were looking at Dame, CJ, Covington, Powell, and Nurkic. Certainly didn't end up playing up out like that. Officially ended the backcourt of Dame and CJ. CJ going to the Pelicans there. Rob Carver, Norman Powell heading out to the Clippers. How quickly things can change. Dame missed the majority of the season after undergoing abdominal surgery. He only played 29 games, 24 points, 4 rebounds, 7 assists. You know, pretty stock standard by his lofty standards. But had one of the worst shooting careers, stretches of his career. So I'm just interested to see how that plays out in the offseason, whether, you know, it was just a bit of, you know, a lack of touch from not playing or whether it was any ongoing ramifications from the surgery. So keen to keep a close eye on him next season, but it was kind of effective. They shut things down pretty quickly. I was excited by Larry Nance heading into the season. He was a guy I thought might be a candidate for sixth man of the year or maybe one of the most underrated players in the league. He was also moved to the Pelicans. Josh Hart came in, was a really positive contributor for that team. But for me, the shining light was undoubtedly Anthony Simons. Fourth season in the league, he more than doubled his highest ever points per game across the season. He dropped 17.3 points, 2.5 rebounds, 4 assists, and went 40.5% from three. Electric stuff from him there. It was just a weird year for Portland. Injuries continued to mount. By the back end of the season, it was really a squad consisting of guys on 10-day contracts. Probably not a record they're too fond of, but after the All-Star break, they lost 20 of 22 games and set an NBA record for most losses by more than 30 points. Certainly a bit of a write-off season, this one. You know, when you lose Dame and they lost that core of guys, hard to do anything meaningful I gave them a D minus, falling well short of my expectations heading into the season. The Sacramento Kings, wow. I predicted them for a 12th place finish. They did indeed finish 12th at 30-52. Oh, where's my guy, Ro? I'm gonna say it again. They continued to be mediocre. Once again, pretty well where I had expected them to be. They missed the playoffs for the 16th consecutive season in a row, which just kind of shows where they're at as a franchise. They lost head coach pretty early in the piece of Luke Walton there before allowing Alvin Gentry as interim coach to finish out the season. Interesting trade regarding DeMontis Sabonis and effectively Tyrese Halliburton, the two big cogs in that deal without going into it. Super high on Halliburton. I'm giving them a big minus for this. They let go of a guy with huge, huge upside potential and a guy who actually wanted to be there, to actually be a part of that franchise, to be a part of that city, commit himself to it, and they offloaded him. There's not, Sacramento is not a destination place, and they let a really good talent go. I just think the Sabonis-Fox combination is going to be really intriguing. I won't say positive, I won't say negative. It's going to be intriguing, just given the fact both can be a little bit suspect on the defensive end, which is an area the Kings need to address the most. Behind the Rockets this season, they gave up the most points per game across the regular season, which, the 29th ranked defense is not going to get it to you. It's going to be another 17th consecutive season missing the playoffs if that trend continues. Davion Mitchell, the 12th pick in last year's draft, got ample game time, didn't really set the world on fire. As I said, Sabonis was solid whilst he was there. Fox showed flashes. Hasn't reached his potential yet. He was putting up 23 points a game, 4 rebounds, 5.5 assists, and a little over a steal a game, yet regressed as an overall offensive player based on efficiency, based on output. But for me, this team, the big thing for them is just addressing that defensive issue. With the West as stacked as it is, it just, for me, feels as if they're miles away from actually being meaningful, being relevant, and not being mediocre. I just don't know where they go. I'm really upset they lost Halliburton. But what is it? One man's trash is another man's treasure. I think he'll flourish as he started to show with the Pacers last season. I think that's a big missed piece for them. I gave them a D rating, the Kings. Let's go. What have we got here? We've got two to go. We got the San Antonio Spurs. Predicted 13th place finished. They finished 10th at 34-48. After the loss of DeRozan, they needed somebody to step up and fill that void. And boy, oh boy, did DeJounte Murray be that guy. He averaged 21 points, 8.3 rebounds, and 9.2 assists, was having 2 steals a game. And Ben, couldn't be more deserving, got his first All-Star nod, was on the fringes of possibly being in an All-NBA team. There were slight rumblings around that. I don't think he was quite there, but certainly warranted an All-Star appearance. As I mentioned in my gradings going into the season, I said they were under Pop. They were going to grit out wins. They were going to play hard every night. And that's exactly what they did. Started the season poorly. Another team that started poorly at 4-13, but things soon started to click as Murray really took charge of this team. Big prop, should I say, to Pop. Greg Popovich there. He broke Don Nelson's record for the most wins as a head coach in their win over the Jazz in the back end of the season. So fantastic for him. What a career he's had. What a resume. It will undoubtedly go down as one of the greatest coaches in NBA history. And to break that long-standing Don Nelson record, very, very well deserved. We saw players like Devin Vassell, Jakob Poeltl, Keldon Johnson. Again, a team somewhat like the Clippers this season. They were all really solid. They weren't great. They arguably not even good. They were just really solid players. And after the Lakers collapsed in the back half of the season, they were able to get enough wins just to clinch a playoff spot there with the Pelicans. Went down 113-103 in that matchup. Was never really close. But I'm giving them a B-minus rating. I'm giving them a positive. I held not much hope for them. But to clinch a playing spot, to see the development of core guys, even though he's since been traded, DeJounte Murray, Johnson, Poeltl, etc., and Pop breaking that record. And just the fact they never gave up on any given night. They really, laid it all out on the floor. I think a B-minus is befitting of their season. That might be a B minus. No, B minus. I'm sticking with it. We'll go B minus. B minus there for the Spurs. Let's go last, but certainly not least, the Utah Jazz predicted third place finish. They finished fifth at 49-33. Now, I spoke about this last week in regards to the Philadelphia 76ers. As like them, the Jazz are perennial underachievers. I'll mention it in a moment. I'm going to give them such a low grade. Thus has been my disappointment over the last few years with this iteration of the team. You know, they're really a team that should have performed a lot better in the postseason than what they have. They've been a regular season team over the last few years and just have never made really any noise in the playoffs, which is almost criminal given the talent they've had on their squad. Regular season, they were pretty hot and cold. They were poor away from home, going 20-21 on the road. For a team that had championship aspirations, to go under 500 on the road is just simply not good enough. Donovan Mitchell, 26 points, 4 rebounds, 5.5 assists, but shot his lowest three-point percentage since his rookie season, going 35.5%. And again, he's another name we've spoken about, Devin Booker. Him and Mitchell are kind of almost on parallel wavelengths there. Whereas Booker's starting to push into that top 15 to top 10 players within the league, Mitchell isn't quite there. And that's where the Jazz needed him to be this season, just didn't quite reach it. They were also missing, you know, for a team with, you know, one of the best scorers in the league in Mitchell and one of the best big men in Rudy Gobert, neither making an All-NBA team was disappointing. Gobert, 15.5 points, 14, nearly a tick under 15 rebounds. But it was just, they just no chemistry. There was no chemistry. There was no consistency. They ended up losing to the Mavs 4-2 in the playoffs, even though Luka missed the first three games. And just, it's disappointing. They had the series at 2-0, had it at 2-0, but got blown out by 25 points in game five before going down by 2 points in game six. And they just looked stagnant. And I think that might have been part of the reason, as you know, they enter this rebuild phase, but part of the reason is Rudy Gobert. He just looked so stagnant because Maxi Kleber just had the ability to stretch the floor, get out and hit threes, and Gobert just couldn't get out to cover him. It was really their undoing. In the playoffs, Mitchell put up stats but was inefficient. The only real shining light was Jordan Clarkson. But that, you know, that effectively ends the Jazz's, this iteration of the Mitchell-Gobert era of the Jazz. I'm giving them a D minus. Partly, you know, a lot of that is due to how they went this season, but a lot of it also comes back to how they've underperformed over the last few seasons. You know, them and the 76ers, as I alluded to, very, very disappointing what they've achieved over the last few years with the talent they've had. I think now we're going to see, you know, talk's been building over the last few days of Donovan Mitchell on the move. The Knicks at this point in time look like the most likely candidate. We'll see how that one plays out, but they are certainly entering a rebuild phase. So, you know, certainly underachieved over that couple of year period. Guys, there you have it. 15 Western Conference teams have rattled through. I find these episodes so hard because there's so much to talk about. You can really dive a lot deeper into their seasons. You could spend weeks upon weeks, an episode for each team if you really wanted to. But I've quickly done that in, you know, 3 to 4 minute segments for each team. Would love to hear what you guys thought of it, where I went right, where I went wrong. You know, I'd love to hear what grading you guys would have given the Lakers, the Clippers, teams like that. As I said, I'm a big boy. I can take your criticism. I'd love to take your praise, but I can take your criticism. So let me know what you think of those gradings. That ends our two-part series of our season gradings, though. I've had a lot of fun doing that, revisiting all these teams, seeing how their seasons played out as compared to my expectations. So I had a lot of fun doing that. Next week, we'll have another massive episode. I've got a few things in store, so I'll keep you guys posted on what's happening there. But certainly looking forward to, you know, discussing a little bit about Summer League, off-season rumors as we start to build as well. It's crazy to think, really. The season's, you know, it's a handful of weeks away, but it's coming around very, very quickly. Thoroughly looking forward to that. So, guys, as always, before I let you go, be sure to stay up to date with all of our socials, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, TikTok. If nothing else, do me a favor. If you've got a mate who likes the NBA, be sure to let them know. Let them know about the pod. Send them my way. If they want to hear some ball talk, want to offer their thoughts and opinions, I would love to have any and all new listeners. Send a shout out. Let me know you're listening, where you're listening from. I love hearing all that stuff. So I think checked the other day. I think we've reached about 53 countries thus far with the podcast. So if you are one of our international listeners, I'd love to hear where you guys are listening from. Guys, without further ado, I will wrap up there. Had an absolute blast. As I said, let me know what you think of those gradings. Until next week, this is Nick Zammit out. Till then, love you, bye.